No one does it bigger and better than Bob. You just can't beat the Bob. This is Canada's number one sports radio show. Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
I hate it when your pen goes sideways in your jacket pocket and you can't find it. Then you can't get the damn thing out. Like, it's just big enough to fit sideways. But it won't come out. It could be the worst of my problems today. Greetings, it's Wednesday, hump day, August the 17th, 2011. And there's a radio program for your listening enjoyment. We're not on TV till 5. Soccer on or something. Later, Buck Martinez, the voice of the Blue Jays, will be with us. A victory over the Seattle's last night. Weird game. Jays get six in the first. The next thing you know, whack, 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 6-6. And then it turns into a football game. Rob Becker, our legal analyst, later on. Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Dave Tippett, the head coach of the Phoenix Coyotes. He is at the NHL's Research and Development Camp, which is ongoing here in Toronto. Adriano Belli of Sportsnet will join us in studio. Mark Fainaruwada of ESPN. Outrage in British Columbia as... Oh, somebody's texting me. How do I turn that off? I thought I turned it off. Don't text me while I'm on the radio, for God's sake. See, I can figure it out. Oh, it's on... See, that's why I got to be on vibrate. And the whole desk will shake. Outrage in British Columbia as some sled dogs were executed. And we do give you fair warning because this is a sensitive story. We'll deal with that shortly before 7 o'clock. So if you're listening now, you may want to consider whether you want to have the show on in the car with the kids. Or in front of the television set or whatever. And we'll pass this warning along to you again later on today. Damien Cox will join us later on. The Northern Ontario Junior Hockey League has become the first to adopt a concussion safety program recommended by the Canadian Hockey League. Robert Mazuka is the commissioner of the NOJHL and joins us on the phone. Hello, Robert. How are you?
I'm well, Bob, and yourself?
Fine, thank you. Tell us what, first of all, for those that won't be aware, and I'm never 100% sure I understand all of the protocols, what is the program, what is the essence of the program that you've adopted?
Basically, it's quite similar to the, well, it's exactly the same thing as the Ontario Hockey League. It's a baseline testing for athletes at the beginning of the season,
right,
where they take a picture or they do some kind of analysis of your brain, I guess, and then mm-hmm. if you do suffer... concussion that, and then you compare the post to the base, and they won't let you come back to play until you're at the baseline again.
Is this an expensive process?
Well, there is a cost involved. There's no doubt, but it's something that the board of directors of the league felt it's was well worth the cost.
Is it? Can you get an insurance program for it?
No.
No. So this is a cost that will be incurred by the individual teams or by the league?
By the league.
Right.
Which is basically the individual teams.
Well, no, collectively, yeah, of course.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. But it's not an issue whereby each team would be responsible for the testing of any individual player as they are potentially concussed, right?
It's mandated by the league. It was passed at the board, so it's a mandated program. So every player that plays in the league will have a test, and you know, if you have a player come in from a trade, that player will be tested as well. So there will be standards, and they'll be followed.
Is it your perception that your league has issues with concussion above and beyond what you would consider the norm?
No, I think in general, the issue of concussions is at the forefront of hockey, as you're aware. And it's really it was a common sense approach that safety is the number one thing that the league decided that we're going to do. And this just happened to be right there at the forefront. And it was just adopted with brief discussion and unanimous consent.
Let's try and put it into context here, Robert. Do you have any numbers on how many players missed playing time either because they were concussed or because of suspicion of concussion?
No, I don't. I'm just 12 days into the job, Bob.
Oh, I see. Were those? Do you plan to keep those kinds of statistics, however, now going forward?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because it would seem to me that it would be important to try and establish not only a baseline test for the concussions, but a baseline of how problematic this situation is, correct?
Absolutely, and that's exactly what we intend to do.
Now the vote was unanimous, I made to understand. So I assume there wasn't significant opposition to this, or was there?
There was absolutely none.
And do you go to who would have been on the vote? It would have been a representative from each of the teams?
It would be the owners and the presidents of each team.
Right. Has there been any feedback from players as yet?
No, it was just announced this morning. So I don't believe. Well, the players will probably be obviously made aware of it soon because the camps are just starting. So it's a process. It's an educational process. As we get closer to each team picking, there will be a process from the league on how we're going to implement this in conjunction with Dr. Michaels and others.
It has been suggested that there, in order to implement this program effectively, you need to have a physician in the arena in order to first examine the individual player upon any kind of suspicious impact, hit, whatever it is. And then it would be the doctor's decision as to whether to proceed with the protocol. Is that how you plan to execute this?
What we plan to do is we're going to follow the recommendations of Dr. Zanotta, and if there's any question whatsoever, whether there's a doctor in attendance, and the trainers will be trained, if there's any question whatsoever, the player will not play.
Okay, but who makes the determination as to whether the player actually has the concussion? Well, it makes the test. I mean, a neurological test will determine whether the player is concussed, but who determines whether you're going to be tested, have that neurological test?
Well, obviously a doctor and the trainers will be there as well. But if there's any question from a trainer's point of view and also the players, you know, the old theory is, well, okay, I'm okay to go. There are certain procedures to follow.
Right.
If the trainer seems that the player is not quite there, and then from there they will be removed from the bench to the dressing room and looked at by a physician. And then after that, Dr. Zanotta will be contacted, and the plan follows suit.
Is it practice, though, in the Northern Ontario League to have a physician in attendance at every game?
No, but there a lot of the teams, and that's one thing about the group of owners here. There's always doctors that are associated with the team or volunteer. It's all volunteer stuff, and there are right. doctors in attendance. Yeah.
But it would be the trainer's first responsibility. So
come off the ice. Or you
right,
the
exactly.
Ice, you bring them here, and then right away, you know, you go to the dressing room or the medical room, and then, you know, the doctor comes and makes an assessment with the trainer, and then we go from there.
So what happens now? Let me take you forward theoretically with Robert Mazzucca, the commissioner of the Northern Ontario Junior Hockey League, and as he said, he's only been on the job of less than 2 weeks. So let's go forward, and we discover that there are an inordinate number of concussions in your league. And I'm not putting a number on that because we don't know what the number would be. And you may determine that 5 would be too high. But it's some number. You get to a point where you believe, all right, there's more concussions here than we thought, and there are more concussions than we're comfortable with. So is this league, have you even addressed what the next step might be if, in fact, you get to that point?
Well, from my discussion with Dr. Zanotta, he says, you know, you're going to have on average some years three concussions per team, and some years you might have four, and then other years you might have one. So if there is the numbers that warrant another look at something or a situation that has to be addressed, we will address it. But don't forget, there's new policies in place for headshots, you know, by Hockey Canada, which will have an impact on that, you know, calling any headshot whatsoever, intentional or not, right, accidental. So that all plays into the whole educational part of the program as well.
So effectively, this is a CHA initiative, not initiative, I mean, because you've accepted these guidelines and proceeded with a policy, but in determining any next steps, if they might come, you would look to the CHA.
So I would look to the Ontario Hockey League, CHL, Mr. Branch, who,
okay,
you know, they're the leaders. You know, they're the best development league in the world, and by their leadership, that's, you know, I'll follow their example, right? So whatever they do, we'll take a look at it and decide. And if it has to be implemented, this league will implement it.
Is there a sense that this league, and I sort of asked you this previously, but do you have any sense in your observation of this league prior to taking the job,
yes,
that this league might be a tough league?
No, not really. And statistically, the amount of fights in over the last 3 years is down 42%.
Good.
Which is great. The one negative is the GM21, which is verbal abuse of the officials.
Ah.
So I've told at the board meeting we had on the weekend, and I'll send a bulletin out at the beginning of the year, that all headshots and all GM21s, verbal abuse of the officials, will be automatically reviewed by myself and addressed.
Is there a blueprint for response to abusing officials, verbal abuse of officials?
There's minimum suspensions, automatic suspensions, minimum suspensions from the Ontario Hockey Federation that we follow.
Okay.
And if any situation warrants additional suspensions, in, I guess, my eyes, after assessing what's happened and what was said, based on the game report from the official, it'll be dealt with.
Is this would you consider this problematic in your league?
No, I don't think it's any different than any other league,
right,
the Canadian Junior Hockey League, but those are issues that have to be addressed, and then they will be. You know, one of the reasons why officials quit officiating is abuse.
Yeah, they get tired of taking, yeah, the crap from, yeah, the players.
Yeah, and the fact that my son's an official, you know,
well,
I get a little pressure at home too, right?
Yeah. And it is it's funny, isn't it? There's a fine line between what you want want your officials to respond and how not to. And we often complain about baseball umpires, Major League Baseball umpires specifically, and how aggressive they are in dealing with players or managers, and how quick they are to throw them out of a game, and how they get right in their faces. And historically and traditionally, hockey officials have not been confrontational with players, and to the point of taking a fair bit before they finally act, whether it's a misconduct or a game misconduct or whatever punishment they deem appropriate. And I wonder if, have you addressed with your officials the perhaps need to be slightly more aggressive, to take less from these guys, give them the hook faster?
No, I was at a league officiating seminar last weekend they had in North Bay with Steve Walcom, had a on-ice and off-ice session for the four-man system. We're implementing a four-man system this year.
Oh, are you? Yeah.
Yeah. And Steve was there, and I had a meeting with the referee-in-chief of our league, Glenn Campbell, and I told Glenn I would like to see the officials have more communication above and beyond what they did last year, and try to be more friendly, but up to a certain point. And then if it escalates from there, talking to the coach or to the captain or the alternate, then you have to deal with the issue and hand out the appropriate penalty.
Oh, so you're almost going the other way.
Well, you know, like you're trying to extend, you're trying to be nice and you're tolerable, but firm, but as well, you know, you want to see communication lines between the referees and the players, and there's got to be one key word is respect between the two and the coaches. It's when you, the coaches or the players, you know, voice raises, yells in an arena, you know, that's, you know, or embarrasses the referee or something like that. That's when it, you cross the line.
Right. Well, you've got a little while before your season starts. We will, we'll wish you the best for the rest of this summer, and we'll stay in touch over the course of the season and see how this initiative, this concussion initiative, works. We, on a personal level, we applaud you for taking this stance. I think everybody should, every league should, at every level,
I agree,
should have this kind of initiative.
I agree.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks very much, Bob.
Robert Mazzucca is the commissioner of the Northern Ontario Junior Hockey League. They are the first junior hockey league below the CHL to adopt a concussion safety program. And it's hard to defy the logic in doing so. It would be, I think, puzzling to most to have a league that didn't have didn't implement this program. Which, of course, raises the question now, how far down the food chain do you go? And should we be looking at, should teams, I mean, are house league atoms, I mean, do you go that far down? Do you go till the first time they, when they begin hitting? Is that the bar? Which is generally in the area of 12 years old. It could be a little bit different in different jurisdictions. And I lose track because they keep moving the needle on it. But it's in that general area. And understand that, you know, I asked Robert, the, you know, do you have doctors at Northern Ontario Junior Games? And I guess the answer really was sometimes. But there's no policy. There are trainers, but there's no policy to have a doctor in attendance. And absent a doctor, and you know yourself, a house league team hasn't got a trainer. Certainly not somebody that's, it's got a parent opening and closing doors. But there's nobody there with, as a general rule, with any medical training. And unless there's a doctor in the arena watching his kid play, you don't have any medical expertise in the building. So who makes that decision? So these are all questions I'm sure that are being asked and answered, but it would appear to me at least that we're moving in the right direction. I'm not sure we're all the way there yet, but so far so good. A little baseball talk when we come back. Buck Martinez is next on Primetime.
Blue Jays baseball. Jays versus the Mariners. Pre-game show with Mike Wilner tonight at 9:30. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Past here. I'm McCowan on a radio program. Cox will be in here in a bit. Rob Becker, Don Banks, Dave Tippett, Adriano Belli, Mark Feiner-Ruwata all later on the program. First, here's the voice of the Blue Jays on Rogers Sportsnet. Here's Buck Martinez. Hello, Bucko.
Mavi, how you doing today, man?
Kicking ass, taking names, you know me. So, here's what I'm at. I'm you look at this Blue Jay roster and you see pieces.
Yep.
And you see tangible pieces. Outside of the pitching staff, I would say that the only place where you could scratch your head and have a real debate about the future, I mean, maybe left field, but would be at second base. And that is principally because we all know Aaron Hill has not performed to expectations the last couple of years, which raises the question about his future. So you watch this guy every day, and, you know, you've been in the chair of the manager. What's your take on Aaron Hill?
I have not seen Aaron Hill play like he did in 2009. You know, I've been here for 2 years. I saw him, you know, from afar across the field.
Sure.
But I didn't see him when he was good. And, you know, last year he had 26 home runs, but, you know, 68 RBIs, he had 205. Kind of the same type of season this year. And, you know, he's played 100 games. He's got a 380 average. I know he's intense. He's tough on himself, and I think that's really hurt him of late. But as far as making a long-term judgment, I mean, what guy's still 29 years old? He still should have some baseball left in him. And having listened to Alex Anthopoulos over the last few days, he's talked about Hill specifically saying, you know, we've got a lot of confidence in his ability to bounce back. But, you know, like I said, I haven't seen him. He had 195 hits 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big number. But, you know, you're right. That is one area where you kind of scratch your head and say, which way should we go here?
And it raises a number of questions. I mean, of course, at the beginning of the day one of this season, when we actually had the show down on the field at the Rogers Center, we got the word that they had taken one of the years of his option off the table. And so, as I understand it, Aaron Hill could become a free agent at the end of the season. Is that you? What you understand?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So there doesn't seem to be a commitment, neither maybe should there be a commitment based on what we've seen. But at the same time, it occurs to me, because you don't have a second baseman of the future ready to go, I'm told. But what you do have is you have a very good, still young shortstop playing for the Toronto Blue Jays, and also a very good and very expensive young shortstop on his way up in Hechavarria. And they have not converted Hechavarria to second base. So does that tell you something?
It tells me that they're still not ready to make a decision there. I think there's still another piece to this whole equation, and that's Brett Laurie.
How so? You don't think Laurie could go back to second base? Or do you?
Why not?
Well, I don't know. I guess I have no reason why not.
Yeah. No, he's a terrific athlete, as we've seen. And yeah, it's been, what, 10, 11 games now? But, you know, I don't know if they're thinking about that. But, you know, that was his position. And when you look at his athleticism, my goodness, he has more awareness for a young player than anybody I've ever seen. The rundown play he had the other day with Bobby Abreu running from third, he handled that like he'd done it 100 times in his career.
Right.
He walked him to home, tagged him out, and the first thing he thought about, where's Mark Trumbull?
And ran
across the diamond and got the double play.
Yeah, but first thing he did, too, was he took a couple of steps towards to Trumbull, which is what you do, right? You don't just fire the ball.
He did it perfectly.
It was textbook.
He did it perfectly, yeah.
Although, wouldn't you acknowledge, Buck, that what you're hearing is what I'm hearing, that if there's a move in the future for Laurie, it probably would be to left field.
Oh, I've not heard that.
I have, you see.
I don't think he's the left fielder by any means. I think he's too athletic to take him off the infield.
Really, huh?
Oh, absolutely. How difficult is it to find a power-hitting third baseman, let alone a power-hitting second baseman?
Well, the Blue Jays thought they had one when Hill, of course, had that great season a couple of years ago, right?
Right, right.
Where he hit crap loads of home runs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting how this is all going to sort out. But you know what's good about it, Bob? They've got options that they haven't had for a long time.
No, and that is intriguing. I mean, we have now seen, and we talked about this the other day, almost a steady parade of players being called up who aren't just guys, but they are guys with a future. Now, some of them apparently are not ready. I mean, we saw Drabek at the beginning of the season, and clearly he wasn't ready. And we've seen Snyder more than a couple of times. And, you know, we saw Stewart. So, but there's been a parade of guys that have been brought up or into this organization that are all young, all have their futures ahead of them. And the vast majority of them have shown enough to be able to stick.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm hearing not only from the Blue Jays, but from other organizations, there were five position prospects at Double A. The catcher Darno, the first baseman McDade, Hechavarria now who's in AAA, Moises Sierra, and Anthony Gose. That's a boatload of prospects on one team. Now you have Nick McGuire, you have Joel Carreño, and you have Chad Jenkins all there as well. Plus, you have another wave, an A-ball with Drew Hutchison. And then you've got the other wave in Vancouver, which is incredible, in Nicolino and Syndergaard. So there are waves of players on the horizon. Travis d'Arnaud is going to catch for Team USA this October. I think that's a tremendous step in his development. So he's going to catch the upper echelon minor league pitchers in baseball for Team USA in a qualifying tournament. So he's making dramatic strides. And from what I'm hearing, and once again, not from the Blue Jays, but from other scouts, many people think he's going to be a 300 hitter in the big leagues with some power.
Well, okay, so let's say he's, let's play with me here. Let's say he's a 2013 guy. And that wouldn't be a stretch, would it?
No.
So, and let's say J.P. Arencibia continues to be what he is right now.
He's third on the team in RBIs.
Yeah. Well, he's third on the team in RBIs, I understand that, but his batting average is a lot lower than expected, and nobody's getting bent out of shape over it. I'm not making an issue. All I'm saying to you is you've watched Arencibia every day. Now you've got this kid who might be a stud. What do you do? Can't have both of them.
Well, that's the thing. Don't make decisions till you have to.
Understand.
That's the important thing.
Right.
You don't have to make a decision with either one of these guys for a while yet. So just let them play, let them develop. JP's got to improve on his consistency behind the plate. There's no question about that. He's had too many pass balls, too many wild pitches. He's got to get better at that. His throwing at times has been okay. But if you're going to be a championship caliber club, the first thing you have is a guy that you can count on behind the plate.
Well, yeah.
I don't care what he hits.
But I think he's better. I was very critical of Arencibia earlier in the year, and I wasn't quiet about it. I didn't think he was very good defensively. In fact, I thought he was pretty poor defensively.
Have you ever been quiet about anything?
No. But I will say this. I've seen a tangible improvement in him defensively. I would agree with you. He's not there yet.
What he's doing, Bob. You know what he's doing? He's calling games very, very well. He's making great adjustments midstream in the course of a game.
Right.
And that's difficult for a young guy to do. He's made some very good strides in the calling of a game. But receiving the ball, we had a great conversation with Mike Socha when they were last in Toronto, and he says the most important thing for his catchers, and he's one of the best at developing catchers, is communication with the pitcher and the ability to control the strike zone, which is receiving the baseball.
Well,
he said if you're going to receive the baseball 175 to 200 times a game, you better be good at it.
Yes,
because
sir.
Because if you take the 1-1 pitch and make it a 2-1 pitch as opposed to a 1-2 pitch, you've turned the game dramatically around with one catch.
But you're talking, I mean, you're right in my wheelhouse on this, because this is what I've been trying to say to people, is that you know, I understand this isn't peewee little league baseball where umpires can be tricked. But if you catch a pitch while your hand is moving and take the ball out of the strike zone, you're never going to get that call, ever.
Never.
And that's what he was doing.
The people confuse receiving the ball with and they like this frame, this phrase, framing it.
Framing it, right.
I think it's an abused word and it's incorrect, inaccurate. If you receive the ball with little movement and are quiet, what message does that send to the umpire?
Well, he threw it where he wanted it.
Exactly.
And if
the catcher thinks it's a good pitch.
Right, so and if your hand's moving, you're chasing it because it's moving out of the strike zone.
Exactly.
And that's what I was seeing with Arencibia over the first month, maybe 6 weeks of the year. And I will say this, I think he's better at it, Buck. I don't know if you see that, but I think he is.
Let's go back last year. John Buck and Jose Molina had a terrible month of April. This is a hard staff to catch. Morrow has a lot of movement and explosive fastball. Romero stuff moves all over the place, and it's a hard staff to catch. John Buck went to Molina last year in April and said, are you having trouble catching these guys? Because I am. Molina told him it's the hardest staff I've had to catch.
He did.
Physically, the moving pitches all over the place with the inexperience and the lack of command. The combination is wicked on a catcher. But you're right. JP has done a better job, but he's not a finished product by any means.
So what is, I mean, I know you've talked about this. You've said it on this show, and I've heard you say it on the air. You're not really concerned about the fact the kid's batting 210. You like the fact that he's hitting home runs and driving in runs. But long term, what's the acceptable number for JP Arencibia? Batting average-wise.
The acceptable number is to produce. Do you want a catcher that's on base with a high on base percentage and hits close to 300 that can't run a lick anyway? Or do you want a guy that's going to drive in everybody, hit doubles and home runs?
Both. That'd be Johnny Bench or...
Well,
you know.
I mean, yeah, that's what you want. You don't average to me doesn't mean a thing for a catcher. Production means something for a catcher. First and foremost, and you know from me from years, you've got to be able to handle pitching staff and make them perform. Secondly, you got to drive in runs. You've got to drive in runs, right. And JP's doing that.
Yeah, I get that.
Yep.
No, I'm with that. I just, you know, I look at a .210 batting average and I go,
Right. It's ugly, but he's a rookie.
I do know that too. And
he also has the challenge. He has the challenge of learning the catching part of things in the big leagues.
Think of
this, Bob, and I know you love baseball. I know how much you know about baseball. The difference between catching AAA pitchers and big league pitchers is absolutely dramatic.
Off the charts, I'm sure. I'm sure it is. And I would also say to you, Buck, that his level of responsibility first, as probably dictated by the organization, they probably said to him, look, worry about catching. Don't worry about hitting. We'll address the hitting somewhere down the road if we have to. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. Think of who his manager is, John Farrell. Where did he come from? Boston. Who caught for Boston? Jason Veritek.
Yeah. Well, he's also a former pitcher who understands the importance of... getting along with the pitchers.
He understands winning. Mm-hmm.
Well, and winning, too.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, so we've solved all the problems, haven't we?
No, you haven't even asked me about Babe Ruth.
What about Babe Ruth? Oh, you mean the tone?
Good, isn't he?
Oh, he's all right.
Brett Laurie.
him. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What do you say? It's just...
You know what? Isn't it something?
I keep waiting to wake up and you know for him to go three or four games and not get a hit and start looking like a rookie who hasn't figured this whole thing out. But damn it, he just won't do it.
You know, Bob, and I've talked to Socia, I've talked to Melvin, and I've talked to Eric Wedge, the managers of the teams we've played, and they say, oh my goodness, when he steps in the box, you know he's going to hit.
Oh yeah.
Just when he gets in the box.
Have you ever seen a player so overtly confident? And I know there's a line between confidence and cocky and arrogant and obnoxious and all that stuff. But he is the most confident looking guy, and he exudes that to the point where I'm sitting at home watching the game, and I'm shocked when he doesn't get one.
I have never seen a great player that wasn't cocky. They all show it in a different fashion. But every great player knows he's the best player on the field, or at least he thinks he is.
Okay, we only got about a minute or so. Let me ask you this. Have you thought about a comparison? Like, who does he make you think of?
I have, and it's hard to really come up with anything because he plays with the George Brett intensity and hits the ball like Dick Allen.
Gee, Dick Allen, that's a good one. I wouldn't have thought of him. Because Brett wasn't a power
older
hit.
Older than you.
Yeah, well, not much, Martinez. Buck, Brett was a great pure hitter who had power, enough power, but certainly wasn't a home run hitter. I think Laurie's going to be a better home run hitter.
Laurie's a better athlete than George Brett.
I would agree with that too. But Dick Allen is an interesting comparison.
He hits the ball hard. I can remember sitting behind him and going, oh, my goodness. I hope nobody gets hit by that.
Honestly, you're around them. His relationship with the other guys, any sense yet that they're hit? Because his youthful exuberance, enthusiasm, almost high school-like, high-five all-the-time cheerleading stuff, that can get old. Any sense that that's happening?
Not one bit. This team
Good.
Loves him.
Good. Yeah. Well, the record isn't great. There are things still to be done. The pitching staff needs to be worked on a little bit, and we have to answer the questions at second base. But
we got a lot of work to do yet. No question about it.
But there's some really good signs on this club.
The foundation of the position players is coming together quite nicely.
Yeah, is it ever. All right, pal. You have a good call tonight. The Mariners and the Blue Jays in the decision maker. There's Buck Martinez from Seattle. Blue Jays winning by a touchdown last night. We'll take the break, tell you what's coming up when primetime continues. You're listening on The Fan, Toronto.
Former shortstop of the Toronto Blue Jays, Tony Fernandez, joins Brady and Lang tomorrow morning at 8:20. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Still waiting for Alex Anthopoulos to send over his first tweet. Anthopoulos, of course, doesn't believe in Twitter, and he's not going to tweet, so we offered to let him. I said I would be the conduit for him so he could call me anytime, and then I'd tweet on his behalf, but he's, I don't think he understands this whole process. Later on the radio program, let me see. Oh, Rob Becker, our legal analyst, will join us. Jailed booster imperils University of Miami football program. Well, Don Banks of SI.com. Dave Tippett, the head coach of the Phoenix Coyotes, is in town for the NHL's research and development camp. We'll talk to him. Adriano Belli of Sportsnet on the CFL. And Mark Fainaruwada on a despicable story out of British Columbia. We'll give you warning a little bit later on. This is a topic that may not be suitable for everyone, may not be suitable for children. But we'll give you another reminder later on. Damian Cox will wander in here. Nothing I can do about that. It's primetime on The Fan, Toronto.